Trying to get coaching cycles started and feeling like you just can't make it work? I've got the email course for you. Realistic Coaching Cycles is a mini course sent right to your inbox. It's 5 days of short videos that will teach you exactly what you need to do to start coaching cycles, document your work with a teacher, and help them implement the learning you've done together. Get it for free at buzzingwithmissb.com/cycles and start your coaching cycles today. Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Hey, Coach, and welcome to episode 182 of Instructional Coaching with Miss B. Today, we are talking about a super important topic, how to build teacher morale when systemic change is what's really needed. And our guest is Suzanne Daly. This is the first episode in our new little series on motivation, morale, and mindset. And I am excited about this series because this is a question I keep getting over and over and over again. How can I build teacher morale? I can't wait to hear what Suzanne has to say about it. Before we get into it, I want you to know that I have a free video little email course for you at buzzingwithmissb.com/resistance. If you go there, you will get a 5 days plus one email course that will teach you how to build the relationship and change the trajectory of the way that you're working with your most resistant teachers. Definitely check it out. It is free and I know you're going to love it. I've heard some amazing feedback on it. People who have told me that it really did completely like 180 their relationship with somebody, and now they're able to work together and it's just changed so much about them and their coaching work. So I cannot wait for you to grab that. That's at buzzingwithmissb.com/resistance. And let's go ahead and welcome Suzanne. So welcome to the podcast, Suzanne.
Hey, Chrissy, it's so good to be here.
I'm so glad that you're here with me. I'm really looking forward to hearing about your expertise in this area. And so as a quick way to introduce yourself, I would love to hear a few things. I want to know, who do you help and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
So just like everybody listening who's in education, we help a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I work in the fourth largest school district in Pennsylvania. So it's the Central Bucks School District. I work primarily in our elementary buildings. We have 15 elementary buildings. So I get to help about 600 colleagues. I get to work with about 9,000 students. And so that's my primary work, is teaching in classrooms, running workshops, really just helping teachers be the best that they can be for the students in front of them. So I try as best as I can to help folks take care of their heads, take care of their hearts, make sure that they're taking their whole selves into consideration, both personally and professionally. And it is a wonderful opportunity, and it is the job of my dreams.
I love it. I love the way you describe your job too. It's it is an incredible job to be able to work with so many teachers. So now, just to get to know you a little bit better, I would love to hear about, what is your favorite place to go?
My favorite place to go at school would be a kindergarten classroom, which for obvious reasons, right? You just, that human interaction and that innocence and that just, they're exploring everything and learning so much about them. And at home, I would have to say it's my book nook. I have a little room that used to be the playroom. So it used to be filled with plastic, loud, messy things. And now our children are 14 and 15. And so I got the playroom back. So it's my book nook, where it's just a place to snuggle up and read. And that's a wonderful way to end most crazy busy days at school.
I love that. I used to have a book nook because I had, it was kind of like a, I don't know if it's like a formal living room, but it's like attached to the den. So you could, it's like a huge doorway. It was really weird, but I love that space because it was like my little library and book area. And then we had kids and now it's a playroom. So,
yes, you'll get it back. You'll get that back.
I will. And I'll probably miss all of the, you know, the dollhouse and blocks and all those things someday.
Or you won't. Or you won't.
Or I'll just be so happy to have my book nook back.
That's right.
Yeah. So I would love to talk about this idea of teacher morale. And so could you describe for us some of the morale issues that we're seeing around the country right now?
Yes, and it's really wild. So I have a podcast. It's called Teach Happier, and there are listeners in over 65 countries right now, Chrissy. And so that shows there is a morale issue way outside of our state and our nation, and that it just shows how much educators need each other right now, right? Whatever level they're working with. And I really feel like it comes down to three things. The first is, I don't know how much we feel respected right now in, and by that I mean, are we trusted to make the decisions for the kids in front of us? Are we trusted enough to know who is in front of us and what they need? So I think sometimes we're in this weird space of not feeling that we are the experts in the room to discern the next right thing for our kids. The second thing is maybe some of the policies or curriculum that's coming to us, is always well-intended, right? But sometimes in the manner in which it's rolled out, in the manner in which we are supported, sometimes feels a bit forced. And so when you combine that with, wait, no, I know what my kids in front of me need, that can certainly add to a low morale. And then finally, fewer people are entering our profession and people are leaving. And so that is a way that we're feeling a bit unsteady in a world that used to feel pretty steady, right? If you're like you or I, Chrissy, I've been at this 23 years. This feels very different. The way that our profession may be perceived or valued is an issue, and it absolutely hurts our individual morale, but then worse, our collective morale. And it's a hard place to be for sure. We have to acknowledge that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It absolutely is coming from multiple places and multiple levels. And I think part of the issue that you kind of mentioned is just nobody talks to teachers. So nobody, I mean, people make all these decisions at a different level, and then teachers are like, okay, I guess I'll just do whatever was directed of me now. Like, what, or there's this looming consequence, So yeah, it's people, maybe if people talk to teachers, I mean, that's one of the biggest issues I feel like we're seeing is that, they just want to be part of the conversation sometimes,
That's all. Just give us a seat at the table so that we can give you an accurate picture of the students in front of us, their needs, academic, social, emotional. We all know that they have changed a lot in the last few years. And I know that we are, quote unquote, back to normal. This is a new normal. This is a new world to navigate, and we need that collective support. And if we don't feel that, and some of us do, actually, I think most of us do, but those who don't, it's just a really hard way to navigate our days. And so, in a way that we can be really good for the kids in front of us.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. My brother has a new principal this year. My brother's a high school teacher, and his principal's favorite thing to say is, "Let's get back to school." Now, I don't know what that means. There's no follow-up. Like, that's just the that's the slogan. And so it's like, okay, but so we're all saying, "We've learned nothing." Like, let's hurrah, and we're fine with this. It's a really frustrating place to be.
But to your point, to be at a seat around the table, then we can share some of our findings, right? Because positive psychologists tell us there is such thing as post-traumatic growth and post-traumatic wisdom. We have grown, we are wiser, we are better equipped, but we need to figure out what comes off the plate. What can we sift out and not return to? And then what can we hold on to? But teachers who are boots on the ground, actively teaching, need a seat around the table in order to share what it is we see and feel and know is best for our kids.
So I'm glad you brought that up because I was curious about positive psychology and how we can actually use this to support our faculty members. So could you share a little bit more about that idea?
Oh, I'd be happy to. So I started learning about positive psychology about 10 years ago. And so what positive psychologists do, you think of a more of a typical psychologist, right? Like you would go see them in times of trouble or a really challenging season, which we all go through, right? So imagine I go to a psychologist and I say, I'm at a -8. Can you just help me get back to baseline? Help me get back to zero. What positive psychologists do is go from zero and up. So, positive psychologists look at people who tend to have what they would call a higher happiness baseline. But when I say happy, Chrissy, I don't mean tra-la-la, good vibes only, toxic positive, like none of that. What I mean by happy is feeling anchored, a little steadier in an unsteady world, a little balanced, understanding that we have agency in what comes at us and how we respond rather than react. And so what positive psychologists, they're brilliant people with all this work, but very few people are talking about it specifically for teachers. And that's where I saw a little bit of a gap. So these last 10 years, I'm thinking, how do I take this really important science, this research-based, proven through fMRI scans, how do I take that and make it meaningful for us that are in such a people, you know, profession, and we're always giving and nurturing? So how do we do that so that when we feel that we are at a negative eight, how do we get back to baseline? Or if we're in a pretty good season and we feel like, yeah, we're doing it, how do we do that even better? Because what positive psychologists find is these happy people, right? Content, aligned, balanced, steady, they're our most resilient people. And so when we are challenged with things, which again is part of a fully lived life, we'll have some tools to help us be a part of our own rescue. When I go and talk to districts or even kids, I was just in a middle school classroom yesterday, I ask people, what's the number one rule of whitewater rafting? And Chrissy, zero people have gotten this. Like, I've asked thousands of people this question. The number one rule of
stay in the raft. That's what I would
sure. People will say stay in the raft. What else do you think that they'll say? What else?
Oh gosh, keep your vest on.
Sure, they always say that, right? Very logical. Yeah. The number one rule in whitewater rafting is be a part of your own rescue.
Okay.
You find yourself off of that raft, it's up to you to discern your next right thing, right? Do you hold on to your vest and kind of like carry through the current? Do you try to hold on to someone to pull you back up? It's an inside job. Well, so is happiness and so is well-being. And so positive psychologists want us to find the agency that we have when things are going really, really great. And when we are in a really challenging season, we have just as much agency in both ways, which is really the best news ever.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think that makes so much sense because we do, when you feel like there's nothing you can do, you are stuck. And when you're stuck, if you feel stuck, you know, you feel awful about everything. And then all you're left to do is complain. There's nothing, you feel like, well, this is what it is. So all I can do is complain.
That's right. We almost become like a husk of ourselves, right? And we are no good at work. We are certainly no good at home. I mean, by the time we come home, we are done. We are out of words and decisions and all the things. And so what's really, really thrilling is some of these really small shifts in our thoughts or language or actions help us get unstuck, help us just do the next right thing. And sometimes, Chrissy, it's just shutting down and going home. Sometimes it's going for a walk. Sometimes it's jumping in the shower. That next right thing will be different for all of us, depending upon how much we're stuck and what it takes for us to feel content, aligned, and balanced. Because what helps you, Chrissy, will be different than what helps me. And that's, of course, part of the human experience. But once we understand what that is, then we can absolutely not fix, not magically heal and be like, nope, everything's fine. Because everything's not fine. If you're a grown-up, there's something literally called the happiness curve. We take a deep dive from 30 to about 55. It's like literally a U-curve of happiness. And that makes perfect sense, right? We are establishing ourselves professionally, taking care of our kids, probably taking care of aging parents. We're involved in our community and causes we care about. It's really tiring, right? So once we learn how to be part of our own rescue, then we can have some agency in it, which is really thrilling.
Yeah. We had to give up our playrooms to or our book rooms to make playrooms. And
that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of putting other things before yourself during that time. And it can seem like overwhelming. I could see that, you know,
because it is overwhelming.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Because it's coming from all directions, home, you know, family. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And the minute we start wanting to get unstuck, but expecting other people to do that work for us, mm-hmm. we are absolutely stuck. It is not up to our bosses, our colleagues, our partners, our children, our students, our friends. It's an inside job. Happiness is an inside job. Mm-hmm. And it's a discipline, which never really sounds right, that happiness is a discipline. Mm-hmm. But once we understand that, then we can take some ownership and say like, no, I get a say in this too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, I'm thinking about advice from my mom, actually. My mom didn't always have the easiest life, but she has always mm-hmm. told me, no one can make you happy. Nothing can make you happy. Your happiness right. is your job. And she would even, to the extent whenever people would say, well, what do you want for your kids? She would never say, I want them to grow up to be happy, because she goes, I have no control over that. I can mm-hmm. teach them to be independent, to take care of themselves, to do all these things, but happiness, they have to choose that. She used to yeah. say it all the time. And I think people are kind of horrified, you know, talking about like 6-year-olds, but it is true, you know? So I think yeah. that's very interesting. I'll have to tell
yeah, there's like a t-shirt, like choose happiness, choose joy.
Uh-huh.
I don't love it. I find that that's like toxic positivity. Mm-hmm. I think joy and happiness is an option, mm-hmm. but on some days it might not
You're not.
Be.
Yeah.
Right. And, but that's, so some people would say, well, what am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. I don't think we're doing anything wrong. I actually think we're doing it exactly right. A fully lived life is going to have wonderfully joyful moments, and it's going to also have days of deep sorrow. Mm-hmm. That's the price of admission. We're not doing it wrong. We're doing it right. We're leaning into the right things to feel that big spectrum of emotions.
Okay. So then I did see something in the information that you put out online, and mm-hmm. it was talking about small shifts bring big gifts. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that and how we can kind of use that mindset?
Sure. Yeah, that is. So, you know, like, so we're recording this right now. I know it's not coming out until March, but it's January, right? Mm-hmm. So now everyone's there. New year, new you. New year's resolution. Like, new year, same us. We are same. No, I mean, yes or yes. And none of us have the capacity for 180 degree anything. None of us, right? But we have the capacity for 2-degree shifts. And there's actually something called the 2-degree phenomenon. And the best way that I explain it to adults and also teenagers and kids is, think about a plane that takes off, and every 10 minutes, it adjusts 2 degrees, 2 degrees, 2 degrees. That plane's going to end up in an entirely different location. Mm-hmm. So what we can do is we can commit to some of these 2-degree shifts in thoughts, language, and actions. And once we practice them consistently, that can get us into a much healthier headspace, heart space. But again, it's up to us. It's a discipline. We have to be a part of our own rescue. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want folks to be overwhelmed with like, wait, what am I supposed to change? Not much. We're not changing anything. We're making these 2-degree shifts. But if we can do them consistently, as realistically as possible, that's when we will start feeling a little more content, aligned, balanced, steady.
Mm-hmm. And then after you get good at that 1-2-degree shift, yeah. then you can start shifting again, right?
Like that's exactly right. Move.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
So as a school leader, mm-hmm. An instructional coach, you know, is a school leader without necessarily the authority of an admin. Mm-hmm. So they're in the middle a lot. And so they hear about these issues from teachers, and then they often can't really do anything about them. Mm-hmm. As far as like systemic change. They may be able to influence, you know, administration and things like that, but they cannot be the person to make the call to change whatever is happening. Mm-hmm. So what can an instructional coach do to support staff morale in actually meaningful ways, you know, the things that actually make a difference?
So some of the best news ever comes from positive psychology, and they say that about 10 to 20% of our lives is fixed. You know, we have no control over it. The weather, who our boss is, who our president is, like that is an unexpected medical diagnosis. That 10 mm-hmm. to 20% of our lives, we can't work away, scroll away, wish, like it's going to mm-hmm. be. But the reason why that's the best news ever is because that leaves 80 to 90% for us to impact or influence. Mm-hmm. So as an instructional coach, I'm in that really weird middle spot of a Venn diagram. I am a teacher through and through, but I sometimes have my foot in the administrative world, mm-hmm. which I'm thankful for because it gives us a voice at the table when we need one. But what I try to do is have colleagues understand what is in their 80%. Okay, you're right. We cannot change this curriculum that we are teaching. Mm-hmm. But how can we use what we know is best for kids and our art of teaching and our passions to bring this curriculum to our students in the most meaningful way? Mm-hmm. Right? We cannot change the program, but we absolutely can have a little bit of agency of how we present it to our kids, right? So it's acknowledging what we can't change, mm-hmm. but also celebrating what we can. And that's where we start to figure out how to be a part of our own rescue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. The whole locus of control. What can you control and what is out of your control? And we mm-hmm. have to like just kind of accept some things and let some things go. And then we can work on the things we actually can. If we're using all of our energy to rail against the things we can't change, then we have nothing left to do the stuff we can.
Yeah. And I really find that most of the time, and we've all heard this, especially, I feel like it's been in a lot of podcasts recently, people just want to be heard, right? So, and then do you want to be heard? Do you want to be helped? Do you need support mm-hmm. in a different way? Like, you just let me know where we are right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And when we can see the person behind the title, right? Whether we're working with a classroom teacher, an instructional aide, a principal, whoever it is, what do they need? How are they motivated? How do they feel affirmed? And how do they feel seen and valued? And that helps us know where to start with them. And we want them to feel cared for. Teachers teach better when we feel valued. That is the beginning and end. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I had said earlier, I'm in 15 buildings. I'm working with 600 of the greatest elementary educators on on the planet. There's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So I use my reminders app on my phone and I keep track of, I was just at a school this morning, popped in to say hi to the librarian on the way to a second grade classroom, heard a little bit about what she's experiencing in her private life. It's on my reminder. I'm just going to check in with her in about a week and make sure that she's okay and that she feels valued. And that just might give her the boost she needs to get through that day. Mm-hmm. So we've got to just know who we're working with, who mm-hmm. we're working alongside, and make them feel like we're making that effort to know them.
Yeah. So I'm hearing, you know, building a relationship, an authentic, true, caring relationship mm-hmm. with people. And so I'm wondering about that as far as, you know, some coaches really struggle with building relationships with their teachers. And some teachers are actively kind of like pushing against that relationship with the coach sure. because of all that it can represent. Mm-hmm. So what are some reflection activities we could do to help teachers and coaches think about relationships like with teachers with each other, teachers with their coaches? What can that look like?
And it's so interesting you bring up relationships because according to positive psychology, 100% of what they would call happy people, mm-hmm. right? These content, aligned, balanced people have the same thing in common. In its strong social relationships, all of them. And so relationships, I know it's almost like, yeah, here we go again with relationships, but like science is telling us that it's of utmost importance. And it's the minute we feel isolated in our work is when we get stuck, right? And so some of the things that I like to do, I certainly like to bring back to light that 80%, 20% reminder of like what we cannot control, but what we can impact or control. I think that's really important. And also trying to understand what motivates people. And I learned this from Robin Jackson. She said that human beings are motivated in one of four ways. Either they want to be really good at something. They're like mastery. They want autonomy. They want some choice. Mm-hmm. They're purpose driven. Like, why are we doing this? Or they need a sense of belonging. They want to know who's going to help us. So once we understand, is this person motivated by mastery, autonomy, purpose, or belonging? That's where we know where we start our conversations with them. Hmm. And people will ask me, well, how am I supposed to know how somebody's motivated? Well, Robin Jackson says, listen to what they complain about. Mm-hmm. Listen to the questions they're asking. That will always tell you how they're motivated, right? Like, go back to that new program. Someone's like, oh, we're starting a new program. I just figured out the old one. Mm-hmm. That is a mastery person, right? So I know that they just want to do this quote unquote correct. Mm-hmm. If someone's like, we're changing programs, like, why would we change a program? Those are our purpose people, right? Okay, well, how is this approach potentially better for kids? We're changing the program again. Got it. What do I like have to do? And then where can I do my own thing? Those are autonomy people, right? Mm-hmm. And so once you understand that, then that's how you can form that more of a genuine relationship. And once someone feels seen, heard, valued, they're like, got it. We can work together now on this. She gets me, you know?
That is really interesting.
Isn't it fascinating? It's
yeah.
so interesting. I've shared that with a lot of people. I'm so grateful to have learned that from Robin. And because it's magic. It mm-hmm. works with our colleagues. It works with our students. It works at home.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to get one of my kids to do something, I know how they're motivated. That's how I, you know, that's how I'm sure that I present it to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking a principal for something. I'm going to think, okay, this person, they are mastery. They want to do it right. Got it. I'm going to ask for that thing and tell them how we can do it following all the rules.
Yeah.
And I will more than likely get what I need.
So interesting.
Magic.
Yeah, I love that. So then my last question is about mindset. So I've read something about setting goals for mindset, which I think is really interesting. And it's not something I would have thought about before. Kind of, I guess, in thinking about it, reminds me of your 2% change, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how can setting goals for our mindset actually support morale? And what would that look like?
So in my book, Teach Happier This School Year, I set it, wait, you can hear, here I am at work. You can hear that an assembly is about to start. We did a really deep reflection at the very beginning of the book and the very end of the book. And the questions were very similar. And I was inspired by these questions by two authors, which I want to be sure to give credit to. So the first author is Emily P. Freeman. And instead of just saying like, to reflect like what's good and what's bad, she makes this little shift in language. And she says, what's life giving and what's life draining? And so I think those are really powerful reflective questions professionally and personally, because it makes you like get behind the thing that you think is the thing.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, like when I really step back and think about it, where do I feel energized? Where do I feel that life is literally being given to me? Mm-hmm. And when do I feel the opposite? That's a really important thing to unpack. And then another thing she asks is to think about like what's working and what's not. Maybe that's a better way to look at it, but both personally and professionally. What routines do you have in place that are serving you? What routines are there that just aren't, you know? And so I think that those deep reflective questions are really, really helpful. And then another author, Gretchen Rubin, she does a lot of work on, she has written like the Happiness Project. She just came out with a book, My Life in Five Senses. And she, her podcast is called like The Happier Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And, or More Happier, I think is what she calls it. And she asks people to make a list. This year it's 24 in 24 because it's 2024. And this is the first year I've tried it. And it actually has caused me to do some deep reflection. The 24 and 24 is, you know, if you could wave a magic wand and you could accomplish some things or strengthen really some things in your life this year, what would they be? So I like have a little like in my notes app is like my 24 and 24 so that like it stays in my mind. But it's things like what I would like to do, like some of these things are so silly, Chrissy. I'm traveling a lot more with the book and things. So I would like to do TSA pre-check.
Okay.
That seems so silly, but like that will do really wonderful things for my happiness, because what's not working for me and what's life draining is when I go to an airport and I see the line, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to miss the flight. And I get all panicked. Like you wouldn't recognize me in an airport. I'm not a good, great version of myself. So it's like things like that. Like, let me give you another, volunteering is really important to me. There is an organization in our area called Code Blue, and that helps, homeless friends who need dinner and shelter at night. So I want to make sure that I prioritize the place where I do that. March is where it's hosted. So I want to make sure in March I get on the calendar. So it's like things that I know that is life-giving to me, right? But if I'm not consciously planning for that, the
Mm-hmm.
month of March could go right by and I don't have any days, right?
Right.
So the 24 and 24 is a really interesting way too, if you're more of a list person, to just knock out, like, I don't know, what are some things I want to do personally and professionally that would make me feel steadier, happier, content, and balanced. So
That
those
is
are just
so
a couple
neat.
of ideas.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I'm definitely
they're
going to
not
look
my
that
ideas.
up. Yeah, I'm definitely going to look that up because I think that's great. And I'm already thinking about some of the things that would be on my list.
Well, it's so fun. So I don't know if you find this weird, but I've been Googling like 24 and 24 lists or 23 and 23
Ah.
to see, because some people put things on. I'm like, oh, yes, I used to give blood all the time and I really haven't. Like, yes, that would make me feel good. That would make me feel like I'm giving back. So you can steal ideas from other people
That's
too.
good. I like that.
Yeah.
Feeling's great. Yeah.
And
Yeah,
it's a
that
year
sounds
long,
good.
right? So
Yeah,
you
right.
can, yeah. And it just kind of keeps you focused on the things you want to focus on.
I love it.
Yeah.
So then, if people are interested in learning more about this or any of the other topics you speak about, or like your book, how can people keep learning from you?
Well, thank you for asking. The easiest way is to just hop on my website, which is suzannedaly.com, social media, it's all called Teach Happier, and the podcast that drops every Sunday evening. It's about a 5 to 8 minute podcast. You can find that anywhere that hosts podcasts.
That sounds perfect. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for your time, Chrissy.
Hey, coach, I am so excited. I am absolutely going to look up that 24 and 24 list and kind of think about how I can make a list that will help me do some of the things that I feel like I'm not really doing some stuff and I would like to write on list so I can mark it off because I am very much that person who's motivated by doing everything the right way, right? So I'm excited about that. If you are still envisioning certain teachers that you're like, I don't know how I'm going to get to these people, check out the Coaching Resistant Teachers mini course. It's at buzzingwithmissb.com/resistance. It will be straight into your inbox and it'll teach you with little videos exactly what you can do to change your relationship with a teacher. It's going to work. I've seen it work and I've used it. Teachers have used it, or coaches have used it and told me that it changed the way they work with teachers. Definitely check it out. Next week, I'm really excited about our episode because actually Suzanne mentioned the topic today, teacher resiliency. So I'm going to talk to Nita Creekmore of Bright Morning, and we're going to look at creating inclusive spaces to support teacher resiliency. So that's going to be a really good topic. You're definitely going to want to check in on that one. And until then, happy coaching. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching!